Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. I will officially call the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting to order. So let's go ahead and get started. Are we good to go, Kelly? Let's go ahead and get a roll from Commissioner.
Yes, we're good to go.
A quorum.
Sure, I'll go ahead. Chairman Campo, you're here. Commissioner Clunin? Commissioner Clunin? Can you hear me? Commissioner Corby?
Here.
Commissioner Crusoe?
I'm here.
Commissioner Don Carlo?
I'm here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald? Well, I think I saw Commissioner Fitzgerald, so.
I did too.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Commissioner Meese?
Here.
And then circling back, Commissioner Clunin, I believe you're here. I can't hear her, but I saw her name. Okay, we have a quorum.
Okay, great. So let's go ahead and I'll start with just some brief comments about Project 11, which is obviously our number one priority right now is to get Project 11 started. Project 11 continues to progress as we transition this year from planning and design to execution and moving dirt. Very exciting, obviously. With the project engineer's report, the WERDA congressional authorization and New START designation all behind us, the next steps are to negotiate the actual port, the actual project partnership agreement or PPA, initiate the parts of the project that we can include in the Beltway 8 preparation, and continue to investigate how industry can contribute to project costs. The PPA will be the main topic of a senior management discussion called a tier one meeting later this week. And many discussions among our technical and legal teams have been going on to prepare for that meeting. In addition, last week we received several proposals for the preparation of the Beltway property. And after these are evaluated, the project award is expected in the next month, in next month's April commission meeting. We're advancing this project because it's fully a local sponsor responsibility and not subject to cost share. And so it represents yet another investment the port is making in advance to accelerate the project and drive regional prosperity. It will be symbolic as the first shovel in the ground for Project 11, essentially digging dirt within 12 months of receiving the signed chief report. It's pretty amazing when you think about how fast this has gone. Definitely quicker than we expected, but very happy about that. The Army Corps of Engineers has committed to implement its new START authority and federal appropriations to let the first contracts for segment 1A before the fourth quarter of this year. We have expanded the Houston Ship Channel website, which is expand the Houston Channel, HoustonShipChannel.com. The website has had tremendous activity and interest regarding the progress and information on Project 11. We've had 28,508 views of the site, just over 20,000 were unique visitors, meaning that there are different people and computers that visited the site more than once. We had 1,800 page views just in March alone. People are spending an average of just under 2 minutes on the page, which is a decent amount of time in the web world. March, the number one way by far came to the site as they searched, and it shows that there's big interest out there to learn more about the project. This has been a pretty effective tool in sharing current activities with our community and stakeholders and keeping them up to date. I appreciate the great work by our staff in maintaining the website and making sure that everyone remains well informed on the Project 11 details. I also want to thank Port Houston employees, the folks that are working on the docks every day, the ILA, the seafarers, and really the broader port community for doing a great job getting us back back to work after the winter storm. I know it was very difficult for everyone involved, and I do appreciate, and I know the overall port community appreciates all the hard work that our teams did in getting us back to work, including our administrative teams that continue to work remotely and our fire and police departments that continue to keep us safe. So I appreciate that. Thank you for great work during this very tough period. Hopefully we have decent weather now and we can all sit back and root our University of Houston Cougars, who made it to the Sweet 16 all the way to the championship. So thank you, and we'll go ahead and continue the meeting. The next item on our agenda is item C1, which is approval of minutes of the Park Commission meeting on February 23rd, 2021. Okay, are there any negative votes? Hearing none, I still think we're getting some noise back there. The minutes pass. Item D1 is our staff report. So Roger, you want to go through that?
Yes, Chairman, thank you. And good morning, commissioners and visitors and everyone, except for those that are making noises on the screen. But anyway, Sorry, thanks, Roger. Thanks for the time. Start out kind of operational update for February. Last month was clearly an unusual with the business interruption that we had due to the freeze. Our container terminals were closed for nearly a week. Our Turn and Basin terminal was closed. And then there was following days of that where we had some fog disruptions as well. So our container volume was down 20%. It's really not surprising, because normally we have 80 container ships a month, and we had 56 in the month of February. So
I want to ask a question. Please.
Kelly, can you remove this person?
Please.
Thank you. Related to that, our volume for the year is down 12% overall in TEUs, but it's only down 7% in our loaded volume. And I remind everybody, we're comparing this again against the January and February of 2020 that was very, very strong. But March activity continues to be solid looking at the month so far. And our import loaded units are actually up 10% for the year, and indications are that the trend will continue. We've had a lot of movement. You may have read just the import demand, but as well as some of the congestion at other ports has been coming through Houston. The exports are being impacted by some of the production of the petrochemical facilities related to those products like resins that ship out in containers, and they're being hampered because these facilities are down. We think that's going to recover soon. As a result, our export loads are down about 20% through February. So the expectations, though, that our containers will begin, and these exports will continue to be trending upward when these facilities return to work. But looking forward, we're confident in the growth of the activity through Houston, especially compared to last year, right? Starting in March, April, May, we had some very lean months when the pandemic hit. But we're confident that this growth is going to continue at a rapid pace. An indication of that is a new Asian service that's going to start, I think, in May by The Alliance. It was announced several months ago, another all-water Asian service into Houston. Real quickly, steel imports are about 5% down last year, but the general overall cargo general cargo is steady. So all this results in a downturn across port docks, a lot of it impacted by the freeze, that our total tonnage is down 8% through the first 8 months. I'd like to take just a minute to talk, give an update. We've talked in recent months about the Clean Air Strategy Plan. As everybody knows, we have had an active interest in our Clean Air Strategy Plan, and in the spirit of partnership and community, we opened the draft for public comment. In January and February, we actually extended that a little bit due to the community requests that were impacted by the freeze. And the Clean Air Strategy Plan and the related goods movement emissions inventory are being updated. So these are works in process, but the logic for clean air is common sense. And the CAPS has three core strategies that we include. It's reducing emissions through equipment upgrades, it's process and efficiency improvements, as well as partnering with the industry. We received over 70 comments, which our team continues to improve, and they were very common in theme that the porch should commit to more transparency and measurement. The porch should commit to environmental sustainability and zero emissions. Port Houston has regulatory oversight over the Houston Ship Channel and should hold all greater Port Houston users responsible and accountable for their emissions. The Clean Air Strategies Plan should document the health impacts of air pollution in the community, and that the plan should take advantage of all the funding sources available to mitigate air pollution. So those were common themes. And I think this transparency and measurement are the point of the Clean Air Strategy Plan and the GMEI, precisely for the reason that we invited our customers, our community, and for public comment, and we appreciate that. Real quickly, regarding our oversight, it needs to be clarified what the port can and cannot do. The port does oversee things like marine construction permits and pipeline license, but it doesn't regulate air impacts from the users and the manufacturer. However, we are committed to being a leader in this effort and convening those in some of these initiatives. And we've taken action recently. As an example, last week the port acted with community suggestions to mitigate emissions by working with willing participants, some tugboat owners applying for $2.5 million in DERA grants for repowering some of the boats to the latest Tier 4 standard. So those are some of the things that we've heard, and therefore we are answering to the call on that and getting those things done. And finally, the most importantly, we've talked about it and we're committed to moving forward with an action team and an execution plan for the government of environmental and sustainability issues. We'll discuss that later next month in the Port Commission Citizens Advisory Council. And it will include our team, our core team at the port, cross-functional team, inviting and recruiting participants into this from our stakeholder group in our community and our industry, NGOs, and to engage in some workshops to prepare and prioritize some of these initiatives. And the objectives are to define the focus projects that add value and take ideas into action and results. So look forward to doing this. We'll roll that out a little bit more next month, but we really look forward to starting this initiative. That's all I have, Chairman. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. I'm really excited about the progress you're making on these environmental groups and getting getting the community input, as we discussed in our Port Commission Advisory Council. So that's good work. The next item will be item E, which is appearances. And I think we have two people who have signed up to speak today. We have Tim Pilotti, Executive Director of Armand Bio Nature Center. So Tim, would you go ahead and you should be able to unmute and join us.
Are you guys able to hear me?
We are.
Fantastic. I'm seeing you on video, but I'm hearing you through my phone, so it's a little awkward.
It's okay.
I hope that you're not getting any echo from me here. Let me preface my comments by saying, first of all, that I speak for the board and the staff and the hundreds of volunteers at Armand Bio Nature Center when I say that we are extremely grateful for the support that the port has given us over the years, both in terms of financial support and in terms of lending port employees to serve on our board. Gary McMahon has served on our board for some time, and we're very, very grateful for his leadership here. I'm here to speak today because we are very excited that the commission is considering putting the 175-acre memorial plot under the purview and care of Armand Bio Nature Center. As most of you already know, this 175-acre triangle-shaped piece of land sits directly between the two pieces of ABNC's current properties, and this move would make ABNC whole, if you will, and contiguous. And we are very proud of the fact that our management of our current 2,500 acres over the last several decades has contributed to the return of many species of wildlife that had disappeared in our area, like the North American river otter and the pair of nesting bald eagles that have graced our waters every winter for the last 10 or 12 years. So you may be interested to know that if the commission does indeed allow the property to come under ABNC's care, we hope to transform and manage it in such a way that it would be attractive to sandhill cranes, which do overwinter in Texas, but have not overwintered in our area for several decades. So we have spoken, actually sandhill cranes require large areas of contiguous space in order, so they're not very nimble birds, and so they need to be able to see if there's any prey coming their way. And so this large area, we've spoken with several experts, and we are very optimistic that the memorial plot would be a perfect site for this. And so over the course of the next couple of years, we hope to transform and manage that site in such a way. And of course, Galveston Bay Foundation holds the conservation easement over that, so we look forward to working in partnership with them. So we're very, very grateful and honored that the commission is taking this move into consideration. And we, of course, we support this, and we are grateful for the support that the port has given us. Thank you very, very much. That's all I have to say.
Absolutely. We definitely appreciate all the hard work that you and the Farm and Bio Nature Center is doing to keep to keep things going and build trails and do all the great things you're doing. This commissioner's item I-4, we're going to talk about it here in a few minutes. Any questions, commissioners, or comments? Okay, great. Let's then move on to our next speaker, which is Christine Singleton from the Healthy Port Community Coalition and Texas Health and Environment Alliance. Christine, are you there? You go. I see you right there. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
To the Port Commission and staff, thank you for designating funding after the Texas freeze directly for communities along the Houston Ship Channel. The freeze took a real toll on the people we work with, creating stress and trauma and leaving people without water and lights. For some who have been impacted by both the health and economic stress of COVID-19, this climate disaster hit the Ship Channel communities as well, but they were hit hard through this experience. The Houston Ship Channel communities are hit hard by pollution during these events too. Companies reported that 3.5 million of pound extra pollution was released by plants, and this pollution can harm people's health. That's why we advocate for a robust clean air strategy plan for that reason, to protect people's health, and also to prep for future disasters. As we all know, hurricane season is quickly approaching. So it's important to be connected to the community. And once again, we are glad to see the port directing resources to poor community members and residents after this disaster. And that would be all for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Obviously, we definitely want to make sure that that we help people in the port community who have issues with the winter storm, and the port approved a $100,000 contribution last meeting. And we are also looking at ways, other direct support mechanisms that we can help in as well. And clearly the environmental issue is a huge issue that that you can't solve overnight, but we're working hard on it. So I appreciate your time and effort and your involvement in that process, because we definitely need a lot of community coaching in there, and so that we're in the right spot. Okay, great. So let's go ahead then and move. I assume there is no other folks. I haven't got an email. Are we good, Eric?
I'm not aware of, Chairman. I don't know of any others.
Okay, perfect. Let's go ahead and then move on to item F1, which is a staff update and discussion of possible actions regarding state legislative matters. Roger, are you going to lead us in this discussion?
Yes, Chairman. And there's a list of things, initiatives, bills that we are keeping our eye out on. Carrick is on as well. Things going on in the legislature that may or may not impact positively or negatively you know, Port Houston issues and our operations. In particular, there's one bill that if you would like, Chairman, I can just kind of highlight one that has been filed regarding the conveyance of land by certain navigation districts, and just kind of hitting the highlights. I think I've shared this with many of you. In summary, it involves deepening the channel of waterway that has been authorized. It applies to the deepening the channel of waterway that has been authorized or modified by the Congress through WERDA 24 or WERDA 2020. So it's fairly narrow in that respect. Some of the things that it applies to is leases that have a term of at least 20 years, and that the district, the navigation district or any navigation district, including us, can sell without complying with the notice and bidding or other requirements that are required in the current statute. Has to be approved by the Port Commission, and then the sale has to be made for an amount that is not less than the reasonable market value of the land, and that the money received from the sale of the real property in excess of the reasonable market value must be used for deepening and widening channels or waterways. So that's kind of the summary of the bill that has been filed on the Senate and the House side.
And Roger, this applies to all ports that have an authorized project from the Corps of Engineers, is that correct, in Texas?
Yes, it does. And it specifically states in that bill that authorized or modified, you know, in WERDA 2014 or WERDA 2020.
Do you know how many projects there are authorized under those two in Texas?
I'm not sure about Corpus. I think there was some authorization in maybe Freeport and Sabine Neches. I don't know for sure offhand, but the only ones that have active projects going on now, I can tell you really, are Sabine Neches, Freeport, Corpus, Houston, maybe Brownsville. So I don't know which of those are applicable at this time. Rich, or do you happen to know? If we're not sure, that's fine. We can find out.
Some of Freeport and Corpus were authorized in 2000. More recently, Sabine, as you mentioned, I think the Galveston opening to the Houston Ship Channel has a separately named project that was authorized as well, but we'd have to double check all that.
Yeah, we'll have to double check, Rick.
Okay, great. Let me just follow up with a couple comments before we open it up for questions and discussion. So I have had conversations with Carol Alvarado. Senator Alvarado filed a bill in the Senate, and I've had a couple conversations with different senators and a couple with state reps on this bill. And idea behind it was to give the port, or is to give ports in general, an ability to finance their projects in a unique way, okay, in terms of their approved deepening projects. We all know that the state provides really no financial support to any port, and really local governments don't, and ports are sort of on their own in terms of being able to raise money to deepen and do their you know, capital improvement projects that are authorized by the federal government in conjunction with the WERDA Act, and also the Corps of Engineers and Chiefs Report, and all the processes that have to be completed. In the discussion that we've been having about how do we, Port Houston, finance our project, we have a lot of different mechanisms that we could use, including revenue bonds, which we've talked about, and I think we've authorized our team to go down the trail and hire advisors and to figure out, you know, what the best option is I think the way this sort of came about was this bill was that the legislature, or at least the writers of the bill, decided that, you know, let's create another flexible financing mechanism that could be put in place by all ports. And when you think about a lease that's over 20 years, the land is already encumbered, and the idea is somehow monetizing the value of that lease and the excess value of the lease. And whenever you have a situation where there's, you know, that you create a market value, and we may think the market value is, you know, one number, and the person that is, or entity that's holding that lease may think it's a very different number, meaning that they might be willing to pay more than we think it's worth, or what we think the market value is of that lease. And so I think the idea is just to create more flexibility for port commissions and for ports in Texas to look at alternative financing mechanisms that are above and beyond normal geo bonds or revenue bonds or more traditional financings that the ports can do. And I think this is that's why this bill is put out there. I think the key pieces of it are, number one, you don't have to do anything if the port commission doesn't want to, right? So each decision that any port makes, whether they use this, assuming this law gets passed, whether they use it or not, is a absolute unilateral decision by the port commission. So you have to put forth a proposal and then evaluate the proposal, and then the port commission decides whether to do it or not. And so that creates a fair amount of flexibility. The excess funds can only be used for deepening and widening, and then the other funds, the market value of the lease, just goes into the port's coffers. So if we wanted to monetize leases generally, and then use the excess specifically for deepening and widening, we could do that. So, and that the funds from the original lease, which we always, or the market value of the existing lease, doesn't have to be used for the deepening and widening, can be used for general purposes. So it gives the port and ports in Texas, you know, sort of another arrow in the quiver from a financing perspective. And I think they're trying to put this forward to give us that flexibility. So with that said, why don't we just open it up for questions and comments? I'm not sure we have an item to approve or not, but I just want to make sure that we get a full discussion and open session on this issue. So, commissioners, comments or questions?
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Clyde. So what happens going forward in years down the road? What happens if we get the wrong kind of commission, which could happen, and everybody decides to start selling the port off, and that particular commission supports it? What do we do then?
Well, I think the bill is fairly narrow. It says that it only can be used for 2014 and 2020 WRDA approved projects. And so I don't think that it doesn't work for future ports if it's not narrowly, I think they've narrowly defined it for this current round of financing. So, you know, 10 years from now, it won't work because those projects will be finished and you won't, this law, this, you know, change in the law wouldn't apply to that. And I think the broad issue that you bring up is we know today who our commissioners are on the Port Authority, and we know that they're, you know, reasonable people and would either make a decision, you know, yes or no, based on the facts and based on whether it is in fact, whether this could in fact be the most a reasonable option for financing. And so I think that the thing that kind of worries me always is the idea of let's have less flexibility in the way that we can finance or run the port, because we're worried in the future that we might have bad port commissioners and it'll do bad things. And so I think that's that's really complicated, especially when you think about it this way. So the state legislature, and this is for all government entities like the port, includes the city of Houston, for example, or Harris County, Any state regulated entity that quasi government or government entity by state law has to get any contract or any expenditure over $50,000 approved by their commission or by their council. And the idea behind that is they don't want any closed door or, you know, transactions that get done behind the light of the public, right? And so that's why we have our meetings and we approve, you know, anything over 50 grand. This item is exactly the same as the $50,000 threshold. And that is that if this bill passes, it gives us the flexibility to put a proposal on the table and to have it viewed by the public and then approved or disapproved by the commission, just like we have to do with our bonds, just like we have to do with every item over 50,000. And so it doesn't really change that. And if you, and to your point, Commissioner, if you have a bad commission, you know, what are we spending? We have $100 million of contracts that are already let this year. We have a budget that has maybe $250 million or $300 million of expenses that we have to approve every year. And so to your point, if you had a bad commission, I don't think this bill that gives us more flexibility is going to make it worse for the citizens of Harris County, because that bad commission is probably going to do a lot of bad things that they do even without this bill. And so, you know, you hope that public officials that are appointed to positions of trust and honor and respect will actually do the job and be reasonable people when it comes to making decisions like that. Yeah. So you could all argue that, you know, who should ultimately make the decision, right, on anything that we do. And ultimately we have to hope and that our port commissioners are, you know, responsible, reasonable people in the future. I think that flexibility is important, I believe. And I think that the more flexibility we have, the better it is for us and better it is to lower the cost. And ultimately, if we lower the cost of doing reports in general, lower the cost of financing, then you have more cash to reinvest in your docks and more cash to buy, you know, cranes and things like that. So to me, it's your point is well taken, but I think we have that risk no matter what, whether this thing passes or not.
I have one more question. What advantages is it to the port to not go out for bids for something like this and give more people the opportunity?
Well, I think the complicated issue you have in a lease situation is that if I have a lease, a 30-year lease, or, you know, anybody has a 30-year lease on a piece of property, the question is, I think that generally speaking, it's always in the lessee's interest to keep their lease. And the idea that you can monetize and maybe get a higher value from the existing leaseholder is why I think that they've written the law the way it is. Because the whole issue of bidding, you know, we have contracts, for example, that we don't bid because of the state law. And the question is, are you going to get less value because you're negotiating directly with a leaser? Like, for example, let's say we have a piece of land that's not for lease today, we have a lease, right? And somebody comes to us and says, I want to lease that piece of land. Do we bid that to the world and say, by the way, I'm leasing this land, and this guy's said he's going to give us, you know, $10. And we don't bid that. We negotiate a lease with that person because that lease is that's how leases are done. So I think the reason that the whole idea behind this is to give people that have leases with the port the opportunity to pay more than the fair market value of what we think the land is, in order to, and in our, you know, the world is a really interesting place. The way I view value versus the way you view value, or somebody who holds a lease views value, is different. And so the idea here is to try to capture excess dollars by creating that ability for the Port Commission to explore. And so keep in mind that at the end of the day, Port Commission doesn't have to do anything. And if you don't like the number, then the answer is no. If you think it's a number that is that is the cheapest and best way for the port to finance part of its project, then you say yes. And so I think we have it's all about flexibility and not, and I think that in my view, it's not my job, or I don't think our commissioners' jobs, to say the state of Texas should tell us exactly how we should monetize the port's assets if we're complying with state law. And I think you have to comply with state law, then you have to make reasonable business decisions. And I think in this case, because the leaseholder already has the property for X number of years, then you can, I think there's an ability to potentially get a higher price from it, because they want to stay in the lease, right? So they're willing to pay a premium compared to somebody else probably. I think that's the logic behind it.
I have a question. How many ports do we have that's leased?
How many pieces of property do we have in the port that's leased?
Right.
Roger?
Do what?
Well, the question would be how many leases that do we have that are at least 20 years? I don't know the number, but there's many of those that are on long-term leases. I don't have a number.
So how many ports do we have that we have leased? We don't know the number that we have leased.
How many properties are?
Yeah, how many properties?
Well, I'm sure, I just don't have that number in front of me, Roy. I don't know if
it's John or...
We have 160 active leases presently, and I'm looking for the number that are the long-term 20 years and above. I'll have that number in just a second. But we have 160 active leases, and that doesn't include submerged leases as well.
Right. So I don't know how many of those would be applicable.
But hypothetically, if they were 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 that were at least for 20 years, then we'd be in a position, or someone would be in a position, to sell those leases also. Is that right? If this bill is passed?
As long as it's 20 years or more, the answer is yes.
And the problem and the concern I have, what happens when somebody decides that they're in the bind for money and they start selling off all these leases? Then I wonder what happens 20, 30 years down the line when you don't have that money. It's gone, it's spent, and now you don't have it coming in. And is this a smart position for the port to start taking, to where we're going to start selling off leases? And it also bothers me that only the people that leased it for 20 years can qualify to buy it. Someone in the public wanted that lease and wanted to pay more for it, they're not even going to be able to bid on that piece of property. I think in the long run, this is just not the way to go about it. It's a surmountable problem. Everybody probably has ideas on it, but I, for one, just do not think that the port should put themselves in a position that they start selling off their leases. That's all I got to say about it.
Yeah, and look, I think that's a, you know, I hear you. I think the issue is the port doesn't have to sell any leases, ever. The commission has the right to never participate if it doesn't think that it is a flexible and a rational, thing to do. And so remember, this is about creating flexibility for the commission if the commission decides to do it. And that's it. And so that's why I think if it was, okay, this is the only way you can go finance it, you got to go sell your leases, that would be bad. I think I wouldn't agree with that, but I would agree with giving the commission more flexibility to explore the costs associated with it and what could ultimately be, be a lower cost financing mechanism for the port. That's all. Other commissioners? Okay, so Roger, we're not planning on doing a motion on this item, are we?
No, well, I'm not sure. The issue is we're being asked by a number of legislators what our position is, you know, on the bill. And it's, you know, it's, they've been told it's not a bill that has been initiated by us. And, you know, we didn't really have a position, for lack of a better word.
I did write the item that we could take a motion on this or any of the other items that we're discussing today. If somebody chooses to make that motion or consider a motion, and if you want to allow it, Chairman.
Okay. Well, again, I think that this is about creating flexibility for the commission, and the commission can do whatever it wants with it, assuming it passes. And whether we decide to do anything with it or not, I like more flexibility rather than less flexibility, especially when we're talking about the amount of money we need to fund Project 11. So I would like to take a position that where when someone asks us about what we think about it, you know, we think I would take a motion to support the legislation as written, which has got to be key. Number one, it has to be only for deepening excess funds, only for deepening and widening, 20 years, all ports in Texas, and the Port Commission has a unilateral right to do nothing ever if they don't want to do it. And so that gives us maximum flexibility, but also gives us the ability, if we want to explore alternatives. And I would say that if I've been in the conversation I had with Carol Alvarado, she definitely is going to have hearings on this and wants to hear from me and others on, you know, what they think about this. So Mr. Chairman, can I have one more question, please? Yes, sir.
Isn't this the same issue that we discussed a few weeks ago that we will stay neutral?
Well, you know, we had this broad discussion about being neutral, and the reason we didn't know what the bill said, we didn't know what it looked like, we hadn't seen any language. And once the language came out, when you look at the way it's been written at this point, I think we can take a, from my perspective, early on in the discussion, you know, I said, look, we're going to be neutral because it's not our bill. And now what's happened is, number one, the bill is broad, so it's all ports, not just Port Houston. It's anybody who has a deepening and widening project approved in 2014 and 2020 MRTA. And it's real specific that the port commissions have unilateral authority to do whatever they want, whether they want to do it or not. And so to me, now they put enough language around it, enough guardrails around it, giving us the right to say no if we don't want to do it. Then I'm more comfortable now saying, you know, I want more flexibility rather than less flexibility. And so, and when I talk to, you know, the politicians that ask me, I say, look, from my perspective, my personal perspective, I think giving commissions like ours more flexibility to finance large projects like this is a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, you can terribleize for sure and say, what if you have bad commissions and what if you have bad people and all that, but that's an issue that's totally separate from either creating flexibility or not. And so I think that the writers of the bill would like to see the port support the bill and as written, so that we don't, now if something changes in the bill where we don't like it, then it changes the construct of what we just discussed, then that's a different animal, right? And we need to come back and revisit it. But to me, what they're doing is creating flexibility for us that we can choose to use or not. And as long as we have that flexibility and that ability, then I think we ought to support it. So you know, with that, you know, we can do a motion to support it. I'm fine doing that. So if there, is there a motion to support it?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Have any other ports gone on board with this bill that we know of?
Roger?
I'm aware of one port that I'm aware of, because it was discussed in the Texas Ports Association. And there was one port that I'm aware of that took a position and they said they were neutral. That's the only one that I'm aware of.
It's an option.
Right.
So I guess, Mr. Chairman, I have just a few observations. We are all aware that this particular legislation is for the enterprise matter. I still remain concerned that industry has not followed through on their pledge of $500 million for their half, which again, they represented to this commission on numerous occasions, and that has not been forthcoming. I appreciate Enterprise forwarding a possible solution, at least on their pledge. I am concerned about the effect on future commissions, which would put them in the position of having to, I guess, get into a debate maybe with some of their large leaseholders long port, on whether or not we'll sell them, you know, sell them their lease properties. And I guess I'm like Commissioner Meese a bit in being really reluctant to sell port property, because we all, I mean, you know, they're not making any more, and it is a pretty major asset of ours. I understand the reasoning behind this legislation, certainly. And I also understand your desire for more flexibility. I guess my reluctance, and it is a serious reluctance to throw the port's support behind this bill, is that there is a reason why the legislature for many, many, many decades have required competitive bidding when a governmental entity sells a project. And among the main things are transparency and certainly getting the most money for public assets, which this is certainly one. So, you know, I understand that not taking a position is taking a position, but I would rather us stay out of this fight as formally as a port commission. So I would not be in support of a motion that wherein we endorse this bill. I just would not. That's all I've got.
And Mr. Chairman, I would follow up with that and say it, that I agree with the Commissioner Don Carlos. I don't agree with it. I think, you know, it's good intentions, no question about it. And I hear what you're saying about flexibility, but this bill can get tweaked in future legislative sessions, and then we could wind up with something that's not going to be anywhere near what we thought we were going to be getting initiated here, and it's going to be on us. And I'm just very uncomfortable with this. The heart and soul of our operation is competitive bidding. You know, we're making a major departure from that here, in my view. And I'm concerned that this could be something that could come back and bite us. And I just can't support it. I agree with the other commissioners.
This is Commissioner Clinton. I know there's been a couple of comments alluding to what happened during last session. I wasn't here for that. Just so I get the current facts, since we now have Carrick Kenny on board. Carrick, is there anything you can add from what you're hearing on this and public policy perspective, just so that, you know, we take advantage of having the ears to the ground there?
You're on mute, Carrick.
I thought I saw him on.
He's on, he's just muted.
Oh.
Still muted. Kelly, can you unmute him?
I have sent him a request to unmute. I can't unmute him directly, unfortunately.
Okay.
Still can't hear you, Carrick. There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I will say that this bill is very complex, and I urge the commissioners to evaluate this legislation from every possible angle. A bill like this could go a lot of different directions, and I think being officially neutral can preserve our ability to work and promote our business objectives going forward.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. So do we want to
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
I make a motion that the Port Authority keep a neutral position in this legislation.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any other comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, do I have any negative votes?
I have a question. Sorry, I had a hard time getting my microphone.
That's okay. Go ahead.
If the root of the concern is the lack of competitive bidding, the bill, as I think I understood, has not been voted upon or finalized. Can that be a comment in terms of an addition or revision to the proposed bill?
Well, I think, I mean, it could be, obviously. I think that the bill as they've written is the bill, and I'm sure there could be, but I think if we're going to be neutral, then we ought to be neutral and say we don't want to opine on any part of the bill and move forward, as opposed to supporting it with the exact language now. Right. I mean, to me, it's more about I think we could take a position like that, but I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense. I think that they've written the bill the way they've written the bill, and it'll be interesting to see how that all plays. And I'm fine with the commission, you know, doing what they're, you know, taking a neutral position on it as a corpus. But I don't think we ought to talk about how can we tweak it to the point where we actually would support it. Right. Because then you have a lot of broader discussion about from this group. And it sounds to me like it's pretty clear that commissioners are uncomfortable supporting the bill as it is, other than a neutral vote, right? And so I'm sure there's lots of ways we could tweak it where people might get feel better about it, but it's really not our job to negotiate a bill that's not ours, I don't think. And so so I don't know if that answers your question, but I think we ought to stay on the motion as it's been made and then take that vote. And if we want to work on it, then maybe we can get together or maybe Carrick can put together some issues, you know, some discussion points, Commissioner Crusoe, that might help some of us or some of the folks get over their issues.
Very good. Very good.
Okay. All right. So we have any other questions or comments, commissioners? Okay, hearing none, do we have any negative votes? Okay, the motion passes. I will say before we move on to this issue that as we always have, the commission, I'll make it known to Senator Alvarado and others that the commission has taken a neutral position on it, and we had a vote on it. Obviously, commissioners can, because we're all individuals, in addition to commissioners, we can have our own opinions and talk to legislatures however we want to talk to them, without the weight of the commission behind us. Okay, so I think that's important to recognize as well. Okay, so let's move on then. Item F2, Roger, I think that Commissioner Clunan, you're going to introduce this, correct?
I can, no problem. I also
want to do that.
Sure. And I also just want to tweak it a bit. So this is, as some of you on the Procurement and Small Business Development Task Force, as it's currently called, have heard and had discussion on, I would like to, as we move forward in our small business and MWBE policy work, to number one, we've had discussions to now call it business equity, and two, so that we simplify and have everything connect. This is a motion to change the Port Commission Procurement and Small Business Development Task Force to be renamed the Business Equity Committee. I spoke with Eric. There's no legal reason to have procurement. So for simplicity, this item will state reconstitute the Port Commission's Procurement and Small Business Development Task Force as the Business Equity Committee, plain and simple.
And that's, you made that as a motion, correct? Okay, is there a second?
I would second.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a second. So questions, commissioners?
I would just say I serve on that committee with Chairman Clunan, and she put a lot of work into this, and we had some very good productive discussions, and this is what we came up with, and I think it's a good idea. I think it gives the committee a little more leverage to get things moving over there and to comply with the disparity study. So I'm strongly in favor of this change, and I would like to congratulate Commissioner Clunan on her hard work, and also Commissioner Don Carlos. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I echo what Commissioner Corgi said. What we envision really is our small business effort, which has been phenomenally successful, in my opinion, and the minority and women-owned business initiative that we're working on, it seems to fold very efficiently into a business equity committee. And I absolutely agree. I think it's a long past time that we basically simplified it into a business equity committee instead of a task force. So I'm absolutely in favor.
Okay. Any other commissioners want to make comments? Okay. Hearing none. Are there any negative votes? Okay. Hearing none. Item F 2 passes. Thank you. We will, I know we're going to have update from the new business equity committee meeting our community soon with our objective of getting the programs all in place by the end of the second quarter. So we'll have more to come on that. Go ahead. So let's move on then to commercial. So Tom, you got these group, you want to take us through?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. The first one item I'd like to speak about is G2. It's to approve a professional services agreement with Kinney International to provide marketing services to develop new intermodal rail service at our Barber's Cut rail facility. This is an attempt to get back to having rail service between Houston and Dallas, and hopefully beyond Dallas in the future. This is a major part of our expansion growth into the years to come. So it is a important service agreement from the operational side. The second item I'd like to talk about in commercial is G3, and it is to approve a 50-year lease to Portwall Partners, who are the affiliate of Packwell. Packwell is a resin packaging facility, so they will take that 55 acres south of Port Road at Bayport and develop a 750,000 square foot rail served warehouse. This will help us move more resin over our docks on the export side. So there, I ask the commission to approve items G1 through G4.
So moved. Is there a motion, Commissioner? Okay, second. They get a second?
I got a question first. On G2,
yeah, we can do questions. Go ahead.
On G2, this is just an association that we get in that's going to help us accomplish what we're trying to do with that rail, as I understand that.
Yes, they will help us market the service and get the major rail lines to come back to Barbers Cut Railroad.
And if this comes to provision and everything works the way we hope it will work, then we could be looking in the future to quite a bit of revenue per year off of that thing. Is that right?
That's correct. From the operational side, if we have the new boxes that are going to go on this rail service, which is what the agreement is, they have to be new containers coming to Houston, not stuff we already have. And if we get that and they can move one train a week per year for the 3 years, that will give us, just from the operational side of the revenue and running the terminal, the rail ramp itself, about $3 million revenue.
So it becomes a no-brainer. Okay.
Yeah, Roy, just to, you know, it certainly gives us opportunity to increase our market share. You read a lot about the opportunities for Houston, especially from Asia. You know, it's very timely for doing that, but even opportunities to serve markets in Middle America, in other areas. I mean, we've got a rail ramp, to be honest with you, we got a rail ramp that now that for a year now that we haven't had any service by the major carriers, you know, having this agreement with someone that not only can market, but also provide as an independent rail operator to meet some of these needs, I think are important. And there's very little risk, right? We don't have anything moving through our rail ramp now. So I think our staff's done a great job of putting this together.
Any other questions, commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second that motion if you didn't have a second.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, the motion has been made and seconded on items G1 through G4. Are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, let's go. We have none in finance this meeting. Let's go to infrastructure, Tom.
Yes, under infrastructure, I1 is to approve staff recommendation to award a contract to Benchmark Ecological Services for sampling and analytical reports on dredging for Port Authority facilities. All dredging that is done at our docks that is our responsibility, we test it before it goes into the Corps of Engineers placements areas to make sure that there's no contaminants. So this is strictly for PHA wharves, the work that is done when we dredge our own wharves. The second item that I'd like to speak about is I3, and it is enter into an interlocal agreement with Harris County to provide rate compliance services for 1 year. Under the government code, we are required to pay prevailing rates of per diem wages on all major construction projects. We have used Harris County for years on this, and it is a good partnership. Just to give an example, I don't have the final numbers for 2020, but in 2020, they did at least 40 visits out to our construction sites and found no violations. So it's good to have this contract in tow to help us maintain the requirements under the government code. And finally, I'd like to bring up I-4, which the gentleman spoke about earlier, the Armin Bayou Nature Center. We are very happy. We've been working on this for a while. We're very happy that Armin Bayou has accepted to take over the responsibilities of the conservation easement for that 175 acres, and we believe it will be a good partnership going into the future. So I ask the commission to approve items I-1 through I-12.
I'll move, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay, motion is second.
Yeah, let me also just note, Commissioner Clunen is recusing on 5 and 7.
Okay. Any questions or comments, commissioners?
He is recusing on which one?
5 and 7.
Commissioner Clunen is on the board of CenterPoint Energy. Good move. Okay. So we have a motion, a second. Any other questions? Do I hear any negative comments or negative votes? If not, the items pass. I-1 through 12. The operations.
Under operations, I'd like to speak about J-4. This is to approve staff recommendations to award a 2-year contract to Calamar USA Broma Americas as a sole source for quarterly inspection services for Broma spreader bars. At the port, we have 158 spreader bars, and while we do inspections with our maintenance department throughout the year, we bring in the manufacturer once a quarter to make sure that they are of the same opinion in terms of the safety of the spreader bars.
Hey, Tom, would you describe for our audience what a spreader bar is and what it does?
I'm going to let Roger do that. He's the expert.
Roger.
The spreader bar on each of our ship shore cranes and our rubber tire gantry cranes is the equipment that's attached to the crane that actually sets down on top of a container with twist locks on it and picks the container up from the top. So it's a very critical piece of equipment, one that has to be structurally sound and has very many repetitions. You talk about we handle 3 million TEU a year, right? So each time one of those boxes picked up by a spreader bar, it's imperative that we have the safety of that equipment. So that inspection by the manufacturer is something that we really need to do.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Tom.
Item J-5 is another sole source. This is to award a contract to Calamar USA for position detection system equipment for the new 9 RTGs that we just received. We have 98 crane RTGs right now. This will take the whole fleet up to having this position detection system. This allows us to track inventory with the, go back to the spreader bars, as the spreader bars are locked or unlocked off of an RTG, it automatically updates our inventory. This is not only an efficiency item, it's also a safety item, because when things would get put in the wrong slot in the inventory, when it was done manually, some person had to physically go out on the terminal, and that's always a safety issue. The less people we have out on the terminal, the better. So this is just for the last 9 that we just got. All future purchases of RTGs will have this system automatically put on when we purchase them, so we won't have to do one-offs anymore. And finally, J-8. This is to approve change of control with respect to the acquisition of Empire Stevedore by its longtime partner, QSL Stevedore, and also transfer the 3 leases from Empire to QSL. I ask the commission now to approve items J-1 through J-10.
So moved.
Second.
Go ahead, Commissioner Meese.
On J-9, what kind of money are you talking about? You're doing a lease for 46 acres. I was curious to know the amount.
J9.
Commissioner Meese, I'll hop in. Commissioner Meese, we updated that from the commission book, and the base rent is $1.2 million a year. So we had, that was inadvertently not included in the book, but in the posting it was actually included. So $1.2 million.
So it was already set, the amount?
Yeah, it was set. It was just a scrivener's error, we will say. But it was posted, and to also further address it, the following item is a base rent, annual base rent of $73,416 a year.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, hearing none, are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, items J1 through J10 pass. Okay, next item is, we don't have anything under people, but port security emergency operations, Tom?
Yes, under PSEO, L1, we received a FEMA security grant, and we are purchasing a mobile emergency response center trailer. This will help us with our mobile command center. The mobile command center is a very well-used product in terms of it's been used by the Harris County. It's been used by other cities along the channel when they have an emergency. The problem is it didn't really have a great generator or fuel tank. It kind of like a RV, and it would run out fairly quickly. This trailer is going to help us because it has a larger generator, a larger fuel tank, and it will help us run that mobile command center for a longer period of time when it is out on a call. Again, that is a security grant, so the approval request is $150,000, but PHA share, when we get reimbursed, will be about $37,000. The second one is to approve the second amendment to the existing PO for Garner Environmental Services. Back in 2019, the commission approved a 3-year contract with Garner as a pre-positioned emergency item in terms of it helps us with, one, when we have an emergency, we make one phone call to Garner. Two, these, because we did bid it out back when we did it in 2019, when it comes to FEMA reimbursement, that counts as the bidding process, so we can not easily because nothing with FEMA is easy, but we can get the funds that are available from FEMA. The reason it's so high is we are just going to refurbish the purchase order for what just happened with the ice storm, which was about $300,000, and also the earlier purchases from COVID, when we got the original PPE stuff from Garner before we started purchasing it through other methods. So that's why you're seeing $450,000. We're really just reimbursing the purchase order that we have. So I ask the commission to approve items L1 through L3.
So move.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any questions, commissioners? Hearing none, are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, items N1 through N6 pass. L1 through L3. Okay, so we have nothing in technology, so that's the meat of the meeting, and we are now gonna go into executive session. So Eric, I'll let you take us there. Commissioners, you know how to get there. You have to log off of this one and get on the next one.
All right, it is now 10:29 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port Houston Authority of Harris County, Texas will convene in a closed meeting as permitted by Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding 33 USCA sections 5B and 2236, and proposed amendment to the agreement of legal services with Littler Mendelson, and deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut Terminal and Beltway properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public employees, and security related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay, well,
yeah, go ahead. So Chairman Campo, you're on. Commissioner Clunan? I think I saw Commissioner Clunan.
I did too.
Commissioner Corgi? I see him too.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Eric?
Yes. Okay. Commissioner Crusoe, got you both.
I'm here.
Commissioner Don Carlos, I think
that's here.
I've heard Commissioner Fitzgerald, and I think last but not least, Commissioner Meese. I think he may not be on yet, but we do have a quorum.
Let's go ahead and get started then. He'll be on in a second.
Okay, so I would just ask that a commissioner move to authorize the Port Authority enter into or amend agreement with legal services with Littler Mendelson on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to that.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have a motion, a second.
I move, Mr. Chairman. Clyde, I'll make a motion.
Okay. And a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, do we have any negative votes? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, so at this point, we are going to, I just want to announce our next meeting is on April 27th, 2021. And at this point, we will adjourn the Port Commission meeting.